You ready? All right. Welcome to another edition of the Liquid Storyteller Podcast. Today we're going to delve into the world of Austrian wines. We are here with Phil and George, two of my good friends that have long been fans of Austrian wine. We hope to touch a little bit on why we came to be fans of Austrian wines and where we're going. So,
good afternoon.
Phil, Nick, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So, Bill, to start out, we're going to put you on the spot first, because you were one of the first people that, when I started talking about Austrian wines, already had a massive base of knowledge as far as the wines go and the region and everything else. How did you come to become one of the uber fans of Austrian wines in the DC area?
I had the great opportunity back in the late 80s to visit the Wachau region on a trip to Vienna, and was able to go out for the day and see the vineyards, visit with one of the groundbreaking earlier wineries called Domaine Wachau, now known as Domaine Wachau, and learned a little bit on that day and came back and decided I needed to learn everything I could possibly learn about the region because I loved it. And continued forever since then.
And George, I know that you came a little bit later to it. You came into the wine industry from healthcare industry.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then now have turned your knowledge of business and a desire to get into wine. What actually got you started on the wine business? Why did you want to get into this fun that we have every single day?
Well, I was looking for a second career in life, and definitely would sit there and draw up diagrams of things that I thought I'd be interested in. And I wanted to stay on my feet. I wanted to engage with people, and I wanted to sell something I actually loved and believed in. So I ended up purchasing a wine and beer shop, and it was the best, I guess, no regret experience of my life. And somewhere in there, I've been 10 years now, and I've learned a lot about wine and beer, but specifically wine, I've grown to love from all different regions. And just think about the Austrian wine in general. Probably about 8 years ago, where we really started to ramp up and really offer different selections of our shop. I remember very clearly it was a Zweigelt that I tried, and at that point, was notes on it, the nose, and everything was just amazing. And since then, we haven't stopped.
Okay, so. As somebody that, again, has been to Austria many times, and as somebody who's been to Austria most recently, I want to ask, was it everything you thought of when you finally got to wine country, or was it something that you found completely different? Because, again, you've been all over the world, Bill, to a bunch of different wineries and a bunch of different experiences. You too now. Does Austria strike you as a typical wine destination? Is there anything special or different about it? Or what were your first impressions?
It's special in the sense of you fly into Vienna and literally you're within arm's reach of all of these wonderful wineries within 30 minutes, 40 minutes of downtown Vienna. It's just unbelievable. If you sit back and you say to yourself, oh, I'm going to go to wine country, you think of the West Coast, you think of Napa Valley. Well, it takes you almost 2 hours to get to Napa Valley from San Francisco, and it can be quite a challenge from the commuting and everything else. In Vienna, you fly in, boom, you're within arm's reach of every single great region, an hour or so.
And the beauty is that there's such a difference between each of them. Even though they're within a couple of hours of each other in a circle, you have the white wines closer to the Danube. You go farther south to Bergamon, and you have all the delicious red wines. Go into Carnuntum, you have this wonderful combination of both. It's so nice to have a little bit of everything. So if you're a white wine drinker, there's great white wines for you. If you're a red wine drinker, there's red wines for you. So it's not, there's a little bit of everything. Again, as George says, within an hour of the city center, and the only city center on the planet that actually has a huge amount of vineyards there within the city itself. So it's perfect destination for anyone who knows.
And speaking of which, I mean, you've got Sipkloster Neuburg, you know, an amazing encapsulation of both the Austrian wine industry, the culture and the history of everything to do with wine there. You know, you've got the Abbey, you've got, you know, the vineyards, you've got the oldest operating winery, you know, within an hour of the city center. Kind of a crazy thing, but that, that touches on, you know, a lot of the history. It was Germany that came down and really started to influence the Austrian wine industry. And we see it even today in their main grape selections. For whites, the most widely planted grape is Grüner Veltliner, followed by Riesling. For reds, we've got Zweigelt, the hybrid grape that was created, and then Blaufränkisch, but a very different interpretation of Blaufränkisch. Do you guys mind talking a little bit about those two grapes? I know for me, I'm extraordinarily excited about Grüner Veltliner because of all the versatility and possibility that grape shows. But also, you know, I grew up in the Finger Lakes of New York, and so Riesling has always been one of my favorite grapes. What about you guys? How do you feel about those two white ones?
So Riesling happens to be my personal favorite white grape. And I like the fact that it's the most versatile white grape, and I love it from the Mosel. I love it from the Rheingau. I love it from the I also love it from and even other parts of Austria. And the beauty of Riesling is it really does better than any other white grape. It shows where it comes from. It tastes completely different depending on where it's made, what its soil type is, what its exposure is. It can be sweet in other areas, but it's bone dry, but beautifully aromatic in Austria. And it, I would say for Grüner, what Grüner is really nice at is showing, even within Austria, you have so many different regions that grow it, and you have the low soils, or you have the very mineralic soils along the Vakal, and the wine is completely different. And it's just a great opportunity to see what that grape can taste like, mostly from the same area. Grüner grows a little bit in Pennsylvania and a little bit in other places, but really it's an Austrian grape. And within Austria, you can even see dramatic differences between one area and another. But I found that it's a, such a user-friendly grape. I mean, the folks who come into my shop love Grüner now. They didn't know what it was before, but once we introduce it to them, it appeals to so many different people because it does have bright aromatics, but it is dry. It doesn't have typically any oak. But it appeals to just such a wide range of people.
So I want to backtrack for a moment, back to the Riesling grape, because, A, first of all, just to check the box, I would agree 100% on what you said about Grüner. But do you find any challenges in the American market with trying to explain why Austrian Riesling is both different from what you see stateside as well as the German versions? Or do you feel like, you know, it's a niche grape, even though it's one of the older grapes around? What are some of the challenges we have with that?
I find that we have a little bit harder time amongst the average consumer getting them to try the dry Rieslings because in their mind, all they've ever known are the sweeter Rieslings and often the lesser quality sweet Rieslings. So they have it in their head that Riesling is that way only.
It's always sweet, and it's not.
Right. And the Grüner, because it's a blank canvas for a lot of them, they're at least more willing to try it at the beginning. And if they like it, they like it. If they don't, they move to a different grade. But I don't find as much resistance to introducing new people to Grüner as I do to Riesling. On the other hand, once the people who love dry Rieslings, once they try these dry Rieslings, they are 100% hooked, as you know, and now they want every one of the high-quality dry Rieslings they can get, including older vintages.
So if you had to pinpoint a reason that they've become Austrian Riesling fans, do you think it is, again, that slight little difference from what they had? Is it a quality issue, a price to quality ratio? Or is it just, you know, again, this, I've always espoused the evolution of the wine drinker is to come back around 360 from Riesling, where we started drinking off the sweet things, to go through the phase of your big reds and punch me in the face and the two threads or your super minerally ones. And then you start to realize the potential and the significance that is aged, wonderfully balanced Riesling that will drink well when it's new and fresh. But also we've got 25 plus years or more that these wines can hold on to.
Keyword there, elegance. Elegance. It's so Austrian Grüner's Riesling is so elegant. They've got so much character.
So, George, give me your two-minute elevator pitch. Why should I care about Austrian white wines?
Again, I'm new to this, but You know, I think, let me just talk from personal experience when I transition a customer from a Sauvignon Blanc or a Pinot Grigio, and I say, hey, why don't we try a Riesling, or why don't we try a Gruner from Austria? Try this, see what this is. Food friendly, it's dry, however, it is so elegant, so good in a sense on the palate as it goes. And then the mouthfeel or the finish, it just sits there and it lingers over and over again. On Sauvignon Blanc, you just feel like you're just getting that pound of grass and grapefruit, and then all of a sudden it just leaves this kind of sour, bitter taste in your mouth. While a Gruner, an Austrian Gruner specifically, it's just, I can't say it anymore. It's an elegant wine, it's quality, and like you said, we drank fresh, or the aged, and it's fantastic.
I think another true benefit is that you have significant value to the wines. If you look at some of the best wines from Austria, some of the best white wines in this case, you can get world-class wines at comparatively reasonable prices. You're not talking about the wines, you know, the wine prices that have happened in some of the other countries where their best of the best have reached levels where most people can't really afford to do those. You can get great Austrian wines at an everyday price point. And if you want to go to some of the single vineyard special releases, those are still within range that you can afford to buy more often than not. And I don't know many other places that can compare for the value of the wines compared to the quality of the wines. Hopefully that won't change over time. They won't suddenly, you know, everything won't suddenly jump up in price. But for right now, the value there is also super strong. And you can find really quality wines at every price point. So if you want an entry-level wine, there's great entry-level wines at reasonable prices. You want to keep moving up the categories, they continue to be great, and they continue to be at a price point that's not, it doesn't break the bank.
So let's touch a little bit on the regions of Austria. You brought up it first, you know, as you did your little intro tour. When we talk about Gruner, again, for me, I'm awestruck by it. I love the fact that here literally is like the full slate of Pantone colors in flavor form, and you can pick out, I want a little spiciness, I want more fruitiness, I want something that's drier, I want something, you know, for a special occasion. The different soil types, the different expressions, they all seem to capture my attention. How do you guys translate what Gruner does to the customer? You know, is it simply that here's an awesome white that you put in out, George, that is going to give you, you know, both elegance and more unique flavors? Or is there something else about Gruner that we should explain to everyone why we become big fans of it?
What I've found from folks is that, you know, they are used to, many of the people that I've found that have enjoyed Gruner, they are used to what are becoming consistent in the area, you know, Pinots, Sauvignon Blancs. And so they like more acidic, drier wines. But they find those wines over time, they're either become boring to them or they don't have as much character. And the beauty of Gruner is that from the bottom level to the top level, they are very expressive. The expressions might be different. It, like you say, that this full technicolor rainbow of flavors, and some of them are more tropical, or some of them are more spicy, or some of them are, you know, more mineralic, but they're all just, they express themselves very well. And so many other grapes don't really express themselves that much or have a single expression, and you just get that same thing over and over and over again. So Gruner is a grape that is special and unique and just something that we really enjoy working with.
Especially from the different regions, the soils. The soils make them, as you said, expressive. It's different. But it's, again, I always look at it, I mean, it could be a porch pounder, but I always look at it as very, very friendly. I always, whenever I pick out wine, either for myself or customers, I always look at it. And then we match that up. I think Gruner is so versatile, but again,
So I think that that brings up a great point between the porch pounders and then also your different variations that you can match up depending on what you're eating, whether we're talking, you know, Asian food, Thai food, sushi, barbecue, anything else. There's always an Austrian wine that, that seems to work with that. If we had to tell the audience about a particular Grüner that you think that they should know, would you go for something like the liter size bottles, get to know me, get to love me, and enjoy me every single day? Or would you go as specific as you can with finding something, you know, from Kamptal or from Kellerberg in the Wachau? If you had to choose just one Grüner that if you hand this bottle to somebody, they're going to get it and they're going to understand. Could you do that?
I would go Losium by Steininger.
How come?
Everything that we just talked about, it's expressive, character. It's so versatile. And the fact that I had a chance to visit, and that also helps the situation. I mean, that's me being 100% transparent and honest. But the fact of the matter is where I speak about it, is it's good juice. It's good juice, and it's a great design label. It's attractive to the customer. Tastes so good.
I think they might have intended that by building a museum of wine,
a
ultimate home field advantage with a resort around wine.
The wine ice cream truck or the ice cream truck that looks like wine. It's a wine truck. Love that. Love that. They did a great job with that. And it really, really enhanced the experience. However, it you know, they always say, oh, well, I'll have people come in and say, oh, I had this wonderful wine, blah, blah, blah. I was at this wedding. I go, was it the wine or was it the experience? We're like, maybe a little bit of both. You know what? This was definitely the wine, and the icing on the cake was definitely the experience. So.
For those listeners not familiar, George is talking specifically about the Steininger Loisium Reserve Stephen Hull Grüner Veltliner. A tribute to the architect behind the Loisium Wine Resort that partnered up with the Carl Steininger and the rest of the Steininger family. Again, multi-generational, amazing, amazing wine folk in the city of Kamptal and Langenlois. Now the reins of the winery being handed over to Eva, who is just absolutely taken everything that both mom loved with her enjoyment of sparkling wine and that dad knows from all of his amazing creations. Just run to exceptional wines. It was one of those wines that I remember bringing back to New York at Thanksgiving to say to my Italian family, wait till you see what this is. You're not going to believe what it is. So I like that choice. Well done. All right, Bill, it's not up to you to top that now.
No, not to step on George's toes, but I agree partially in that I'll stick with Steininger for a moment, but then expand beyond that. I really love showing the Kamptal Classic from the same winery because it's a good little call. It's a little bit less expensive, it's more accessible for every day, and there is no better combination of price performance in Austria right now for the Grüners, I believe. It's just and we're pouring it by the glass because people, it's just really hit a lot of people really well. But that being said, I would go to the Wachau. Wachau is the most, you know, well-known, in the U.S. anyway, area for the white wines. Very famous region along the Danube, making tremendous wines. There's one small producer, which is, you know, a personal friend and makes amazing wines. And his name is Martin Mittelbach, and he is at Tegernseehof. And his Bergdistel Grüner is a great opportunity to start that process from going from kind of everyday Grüners to the special single vineyard, premier cru, whatever word you want to try to use. The Bergdistel is that perfect next step. And it's got this great body to it, great acidity and balance every year. And it just kind of introduces you to that kind of next step without having to go into the single vineyards and spend that much more if you don't know the difference between this single vineyard and that single vineyard. It's a wonderful blend of different vineyards within the most special part of the Wachau Valley in Leuven and in Bernstein. So I would say that would be the one that I would pick.
Also an exceptional choice. Again, for listeners not familiar, if you've ever had the pleasure of being subjugated to one of the Viking River Cruise commercials or AMA Waterway commercials, they show the big curve and the gabled vineyards. That is the town of Durenstein. Indeed, Martin Mittelbach and his family only been making wine for about 1,100 years now. So maybe a little bit of a patrician on their side. And a great choice. Definitely one of those people that, again, has earned both the praise and the consternation from people, and including wonderful nicknames like the Devil, because of how good he is at making magic happen in his cellar. Nicely done. Is there anything else we should share with the audience about Austrian whites? Or do we think, you know, that the simple advice is really the best here? Go out, find them, drink them, and discover for yourself.
Absolutely. Just go and see what makes sense to you, what's available to you. Start at whatever price point seems, you know, appropriate for you. But definitely try them, and you will be rewarded with no matter what you choose.
Yeah. Again, I always look at things regarding food and wine pairing, and you will not regret pairing up any of your meals with a beautiful Austrian white wine. You're in a Riesling, you name it. And from different regions, as Bill mentioned, they've got such different character and expression. Just fantastic. So yeah, start small and then work your way up. And then work your way into the single vineyards. Maybe you try one of the Devil's wines. might hurt a little bit in the pocket originally, but, you know, to start, but you won't regret it. You won't regret it at all. It makes amazing wines.
So where whites make up over 75% of the Austrian wine market, the area that seems to be growing and slowly making inroads and more fans with the American palate are the Austrian reds. You touched on one of your key wines to get you into Austria. It was Zweigelt, a legendary grape created by Professor Fritz Zweigelt. That was a combination of Blaufränkisch and St. Laurent. Blaufränkisch is still the number two grape as far as plantings go, but getting more scrutiny from most of the wine world and from a lot of the Austrian winemakers, because it seems to have grown up in its own right as far as a different expression than its German sibling or cousin or descendant. What if we delve into the world of Austrian wines, much like with the whites, do we need to share and tell people about to get them to take that bottle in their hand and give it a shot?
They're some of the reds that I've tried originally, or when I first started drinking some of Austrian reds, they were very light, they were fresh. They also, some of them had, Zweigelt specifically, had this black pepper finish. So it wasn't a 14.5% ABV Cabernet Sauvignon that's going to punch you in your face and you have to have a meal with it. These were light wines, light red wines that had character that you could drink by themselves, maybe with a touch of chill on them as well. But also food friendly, with a nice bowl of pasta, maybe a slice of pizza, or you know what, it could complement the filet mignon, depending on you know what you were eating that evening. So I just love the fact that it wasn't going to take me overboard. And you know, I know a lot of people sit back and say, "Well, percentage of wine, does it really make a difference?" It does make a difference, and I think it really, really good quality wine. You shouldn't be able to feel the heat from the wine. And I think these are well balanced. I think balance comes out is the key word.
So in the Austrian reds, again, much like with the whites, we're tracing back to there's balance and there's approachability, but there's still a hook. Now, I will say my recollection of your introduction to Austrian reds very similar, but I also recall that there was one particular wine from a gentleman that caused you to say wow the first time you tried it, and that maybe that was one of those things that turned your head looking at Austria in a little different direction, and that was from the one and only the legend himself, Leo Hillinger, and a little wine blend that Michael, his former left-hand man, introduced you called Hillside.
Yes.
Which was taking the Austrian varietals and then putting them squarely side by side with international varieties to just again blow the doors off of people's taste buds when they haven't seen something like that.
Completely, it takes your taste buds. It takes your taste buds on a journey. Literally, it is an unbelievable bottle of wine. And actually, that was a little bit higher in ABV. However, food friendly, just fantastic altogether. And again, if you're looking at the California cats or some other regions, sometimes I feel some of them are too earthy and soil driven. Others are too jammy. The balance of Austrian reds and what Leo did was fantastic in the hillside.
Bill, any thoughts on the world of Austrian reds?
What I'm really excited about in Austrian reds is right now, while I love Schweigelt and there's wonderful Schweigelt being produced, primarily south of Vienna, as we know, in Carnuntum and into Burgenland, I'm really most excited at the moment about about Blaufränkisch and how different Blaufränkisch can be, whether you're looking at the wines from Leiterberg or from the Mittelburgenland or going out to where our friend Martin Matthias Schalitz is. It's just the wines truly do show where they come from, much like I was talking about with the Rieslings and the Grüners. I'm really, right now, really excited about trying these various parts. Same grape, but just seeing the differences where they come from. And Blaufränkisch is that grape.
So let's put a hold on that for 1 second, because I feel like, again, Blaufränkisch, George mentioned Zweigelt as similar to Pinots and Beaujolais with a more peppery characteristic. But I think Blaufränkisch maybe is not as easy to pigeonhole and describe as Zweigelt for somebody that's just tuning in and listening here. So if we had to backtrack a little bit, what are general impressions of the Blaufränkisch grape and what makes it interesting and why is it worth seeking out, if we can head on a few of those things?
Well, Blaufränkisch has, for the people who prefer a little bit larger body, medium to full body, Blaufränkisch can have that. If you like those bright red fruits, it often mostly has that. So if it's perhaps more user-friendly to folks who have not had this wine before, but are used to drinking things more like Cabernets. And there are even some being made on almost a Cabernet way with a lot of new oak, and you can find some that are almost Cabernet-like. If that's what you prefer, try those. They also there are many that are made much more subtly and much more balanced, and those are, in my opinion, are more truly show the grape more. But I think if you're looking for something just a little bit larger bodied, because that's what you're used to, and you're afraid of trying something that's lighter, like the Zweigelt might be, it might appeal to you rather than the Zweigelt. They're also doing some nice things with, as you guys were talking about, these kind of super Austrians that are being made, these blends of the local grapes, the Zweigelt and the Blaufränkisch, with Cabernet or Merlot, and can be tremendous, and they can give you kind of that beautiful combination of both. So if you like those big full-bodied American styles or others, and you get this little bit of subtlety from the Blaufränkisch or the Zweigelt, you can get a little bit of everything. So it's a perfect combination.
So if you had to describe what Blaufränkisch brings to the party, what would you say? Is it structure like so many different wines where Merlot is added into it? Is it Syrah for darkness and color? I mean, what's the keys of Blaufränkisch that help make it this grape that is really something that we start to see as a special, or maybe the next big thing?
Well, I would hope that it becomes the next big thing because it is such a great grape. I would say that the beauty is you get a little bit of everything. So it doesn't have quite as much of the spice as the Zweigelt does, but it does have some. Depending upon where it comes from, it can have the lighter red fruits all the way up to the darker red fruits, almost to the blue fruits. If you get the wines from out where Jalitz is, it almost gives you the impression of Nebbiolo. So if you are a Nebbiolo fan, you might enjoy this grape from that part of the area. If you, as I said, if you're a Cab fan, you might enjoy it from down near the lake, where they're making these big, large, because it's so warm, it's almost the Napa of Austria, they can make these large, full-bodied versions that they put into oak, and that might appeal to you. You go over to the Leiterberg and to Leo's wonderful wines from the Leiterberg, they're much more subtle, Not that that means they're light, but they are. But the flavors are more subtle, and they're just very pleasing. And when I've taken new people to Germany who had never tried Blaufränkisch before, they've come back really excited about the grape. So I think there's a lot to offer.
Okay, I think that touches on some of the great things about Austria. I guess if we have to leave with one thing about Austrian wines in America, I definitely want to cross back to a little bit of what George you had touched on multiple times in this conversation, which is the versatility and the ability for these wines to have so many different occasions, whether it be a special dinner, or an outdoor picnic. Do you think that there is any secret that Austrian wines have? Is it that lower alcohol that makes them so enjoyable for many different occasions, or is there something else that they seem to bring to the dinner plate when you're sitting down?
Quality wines, expressive in taste, and versatile, as we mentioned. It's just not in my mind. I would say everybody needs to not only try these wines during Thanksgiving or the other holidays throughout the year, this should be an everyday. It should be an everyday wine. Find what you like. Just looking to have a bottle during the week. Bottle of green is wonderful. It's by God. Point. Point being is that there's so much opportunity to veer away from, I'm looking for a French Bordeaux, an Italian red, or I'm looking for, a Spanish, Rioja. Let's open up our minds to something different. It's really, really going to bring us, again, something completely different, more flavor, and open up our palates.
Well, so that's
a great opportunity.
Bill, what about you?
I mean, I think one of the great shames is that we don't see these wines on wine lists more often when you go to restaurants in our area, at least. These wines do pair perfectly with so many great ethnic cuisines, and we have so many great ethnic restaurants in our area, and I'm sure everybody does all across the country. And if we could, we talk about this all the time. If we could go into some of our favorite Chinese restaurants or Thai restaurants or Indian restaurants, and we could have these wines available on the list, because we know they pair perfectly with those. You certainly can, you can have a good Grüner on any wine list with any kind of food, whether it's a casual American or fine dining. So I guess, like I'm saying, I wish that we had more opportunity to see these wines in not just the best restaurants in the world, which many of them are. You could look at some of the best wine lists in the large cities. They have some of these higher-end Grüners and Blaufränkisch and so on. But I wish we could see more of them just in your everyday neighborhood restaurant.
And agree.
We all have to just figure out a way to make that happen, because everybody's life would be made happier if they could enjoy these wines with some of those other cuisines that they go perfect with.
And us, and both of us being shop foremen, so to speak, it's our jobs to educate, take our experiences, take our palates, and educate the customers and open their minds up to Austrian wine.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate you sitting down to have a great conversation. Bill Van Leeden from Downtown Crown, George Fotonakis from The Bottle Shop and Beers and Cheers 2. Guys, any parting words, anything else that, whether it be, try sect with popcorn, try a Grüner Veltliner with goat cheese fritters, or just sit down with a slice of Zweigelt or a slice of pizza and some Zweigelt.
Well, we didn't really mention, we didn't talk about the Zekt, and, for those of you who are bubbles lovers, please search out some Zekt, which is the Austrian version of champagne. Specifically, if you can find it from the Steininger family, who make some of the best wines on the planet, and specifically the sparkling wines. So seek those out if you are a bubbles lover, because it is a hidden gem within the Austrian wine world. And so please keep an eye out for that as a added tip that we didn't talk about.
George, anything that you want to mention?
With Steininger or just in general?
In general.
The words, you know what I would say? I would tell the person listening to this podcast right now, put Vienna, Austria on your list of places to visit and go do a wine tour. We'll be more than happy to help you with that. Unbelievable. Visit wine country because it's close, it's affordable, and you have an amazing experience with amazing wines and wonderful people.
Yes.
It's very family oriented, very family driven, and just the experience as a whole is going to bring you so much, in my mind, wealth of knowledge, but happiness in the everything that you did and what you tried. So put Vienna, Austria on your list of travels. And then maybe you might be able to try a rosé of Cab Sec from Steininger. Or maybe a rosé.
Schweigel.
From was it Rosanna from Netzel. It's just great people, great wine region, unbelievable wines.
You're really lucky, maybe a 20-year-old bottle of rosé covered in fur from the legendary Middleback Cellars.
I think it was 50. That's fine. It was 50 years old, maybe. But yes, I appreciate it.
Well, gentlemen, again, my name is Nick Matarese, liquid storyteller from Siemer Wines. It is a pleasure and honor to be able to talk to you guys about these wines and engage you guys with events. And I look forward to our next trip to Austria, and I hope we get to all do it together. Parting words?
Thanks very much, Nick. And please, everybody, get out there and try Austrian wine.
Yep. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to just express my thoughts and give you an understanding of my palate, I guess. Thank you, Nick. Try Austrian wine.
Thanks, you guys. We appreciate it. We'll be back for another episode soon.